Please join me. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Wonderful, Venerable, and over to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, so now it is my job to talk a little bit about meditation, and then it is your job to do some meditation, or shall I say, to just be there. Because in meditation, we often talk about doing meditation, and we have all these teachings and tricks and trying to achieve something. That is often the idea that we have. We hear about these states of meditation, these insights. We may even hear about nirvana and all these whatever bodhisattvahood and arahantship and all these things we hear about, and we want to get it. We want to do it. Today, meditation, we're going to get it. If we just sit here and everything is suffering, what's the use of meditation, you might think. Yeah? And that attitude is sometimes very unhelpful, that we want to get something out of meditation. And you sit down for meditation and you have this expectation in your mind, like I'm going to get this deep state of meditation that I've been hearing about so much, or I'm going to get these lights in the mind or whatever, or whatever it is your goal. It might be something more humble and just say, I'm going to find some quietude. I'm going to stop my thoughts today or something like that. You know, we meditate with a goal always, often. But today I will teach you a little bit about letting go of that attitude of having a goal and to just meditate for the sake of it. Not even consider it meditation, because even the word meditation may already set us up for trouble. Because the word meditation in itself, and I was even used in corporate businesses, like you have meditation teachers who make a lot of money, and they teach people how to be calm so that their bosses can get more out of them, yeah? Out of their employees, when they're more calm and more mindful. Mindfulness is a business. Meditation is a business. But not for monks, and not for nuns, and not for Buddhists, like most of you, I suppose, are. I don't think you are here for business. So remind yourself of that when you meditate. This is not business. This is not trying to achieve anything. This is not trying to become anything else than what you already are. Because there is these hindrances that the Buddha talked about, hindrances in meditation. And one of the main hindrances is the longing for something else. And there is a traditional list of 5 hindrances. Most of you will probably know them. I will not teach them all now, but that is just one way to classify like obstacles in meditation. And the first of those is usually sensual desire, but in some places it's also just called more generally longing, is a way you could translate it. It's abhija is the word there, Pali word. And it just means any kind of desire, in my way of looking at the word, to be somewhere where you are not. And in meditation, we don't need that kind of desire. We just sit here and we don't even need to be happy. We just sit here and don't have any desire. That is the whole goal of the Buddhist path, is to let go of all sorts of desire for anything whatsoever. Yeah, I talked a little bit about meditation as a business. Okay, most of you won't have probably much desire to achieve, a higher job or a higher pay grade or whatever. You don't have that kind of desire. Don't have much desire to for worldly things, probably, but you might have these spiritual desires to attain these things you hear about. But as I said already, that kind of desire can be very, very problematic when you're meditating, because you're always trying to get somewhere else. You're trying to get away from where you are now to some other place, to enlightenment, let's say. Yeah, maybe a bit of extreme goal to say it, Seth, but that is sort of the, you think you're here now and you want to be somewhere else. But the whole thing about enlightenment is you stop the wanting for anything else. Because, and maybe this is a way to approach this topic today, is all sorts of experiences you have in your meditation, whatever you're aware of, it's all, the Buddha said, it's all impermanent. It's all not gonna last. So you might have a very peaceful meditation and you achieve these things that you've heard the monks and nuns talk about. And you know what you'll find out? You can't keep them with you. They're just there for a little bit and then they pass away again. And they're not very reliable in that sense. It's all impermanent. Whatever you will experience tonight in our group meditation, and I'll guide in a moment, is gonna be temporary. It's gonna be there for a while and then it's gonna disappear again. This is true for so-called bad things, or I wouldn't even call them bad, but let's say painful things, undesirable things. But it's also true for pleasant things and what you might call desirable things. All experiences come and go. So what is our use of desiring them if they just come and go? That is the whole point. This goes very deep to the first noble truth of the Buddha, that there's no use to desire things which are impermanent, because you can't keep them anyway. So a peaceful mind is impermanent as well. And I know there's some Buddhists who say there's like a permanent kind of peaceful mind that lasts forever and ever after an enlightened person passes away, but I will say no, they haven't really seen impermanence yet, because the Buddha said the mind is also impermanent. And when you see that, you actually don't have to be that extraordinary to be able to see that. It can be pretty clear that the mind itself is also just a changing phenomenon. And the Buddha said, if you take anything to be in your life, in your person, to be permanent, let it be your body. Because your body is born and then it lasts for about 100 years at most, usually less, but that's pretty long. However, the mind, it changes and comes and goes all the time. Like a monkey going through a forest, grabbing one branch and then the other, the Buddha said. So he basically says the body is sort of kind of, it's not permanent in the sense that it is always the same, but it is permanent in that it is always there, in a sense. But the mind is much different. It's actually much more fleeting. And it is somewhat understandable, but even if you just have this as an insight of enlightenment stages, but just as a more intellectual idea, to approach your meditation with that idea that the mind is going to be changing, then you can actually let go of a lot of desire in meditation, because you know that whatever you attain in your meditation, it's also not going to last. Yeah, it's going to change again. Yeah, and you have these states called jhanas or nimittas, or some of you might have heard of all those terms. And okay, it's nice when they happen, but then they go away again. And the whole point is to realize that things that come and go are not worth of our attachment and desire. And maybe nimittas and jhanas is a little bit of a high aim, but you can relate to it probably on whatever level you are personally at with your meditation. It's often you meditate with a certain sense of longing in the mind to have something that you don't have right now when you start, whatever that may be. So our goal today is going to be to let go of that longing, and to, well, even if sometimes you have the longing to let go of longing, the desire to not desire. You hear all this talk about not desire, then you start desiring it. Ah, I wish I could have no desire. Let me have no desire. Well, that's also a desire. So it's also good to have a mind with desire. We don't desire to have no desire. And then it's counterintuitive, but then your desire will start to lessen. And that is, even though you don't want it, you don't crave for it, you don't desire it, that is when the mind becomes peaceful. Why is that so? Because you don't try and go somewhere else than where you already are. You don't want to achieve anything. And if you're just happy where you are, whatever that is, then you'll find contentment there. And when you find contentment there, then you can rest in that place, and the mind will not have to think so much. It won't have to plan that much. It won't get annoyed by stuff. Let's say your meditation turns out to be very sleepy, let's say, is an example. No need to be annoyed by that. You know, we don't have desire to not be sleepy. Sleepiness is impermanent. Being awake is impermanent. It's all good. We can just sit here and be with whatever is. Yeah. And in that way, the mind becomes peaceful, because you're not adding all that fuel of craving and ill will, and because the two often go together. And with that kind of attitude, your meditation becomes very first of all, easy, but also very pleasant. It's something you can always do. And often, it's a final note, often we talk about meditation as an object and the attitude towards that object or things like that. This is terminology that meditation teachers often use, and it's helpful, but in a way, another way to look at it is that the attitude you have towards meditation, that is itself all that meditation is. Meditation is just an attitude that we have. And it doesn't matter what comes into the content of the mind, as long as our attitude is proper. And that attitude we will develop today is one of not desiring anything, because we know that things are unreliable and impermanent. And if that is something you would like to try out in meditation, then I can do a guided meditation in a moment. I will ring the bell to start in a moment. If you think you want to do something else, I've got a bell here, by the way, so hopefully the microphone picks it up in a moment. If you think that that kind of reflection on impermanence today is not suitable or is too challenging, or then you can do your own thing. You don't have to listen to me. You can do whatever you want. I don't care. Or do whatever you don't want. Yeah, there's no wanting. Whatever helps you to not want. But I will do a guided meditation on impermanence and not desiring, because those two principles go hand in hand. I will do that for about 40 minutes. And then afterwards, there is usually an opportunity to ask some questions as well about this or anything else. Okay, is everybody okay with that?
It sounds wonderful, Venerable.
All right. Well, let's do that then. I'll first ring the gong to signal the end of the little talk and the start of the meditation, and then I'll guide you through it. So, dear friends, we will be sitting here together for about 40 minutes. And those 40 minutes we devote to just being here with whatever happens. And those 40 minutes are not devoted to trying to achieve anything. It's often helpful to set up your mind at the start of meditation to have this kind of a mindset that you can rely upon and return to throughout meditation. And today, that attitude will be that we realize whatever will happen in these 40 minutes, whatever we experience, whether that be suffering or peace or anything in between, it will not last forever. So there's no need to force anything out of the mind or into the mind. By which I mean, there's no need to try and get rid of anything. Also no need to try and create anything. Because whatever we so desperately try to get rid of, It will disappear by itself at some point anyway, usually much more quickly if we don't interfere. And also just as important, whatever we try to create is not gonna last anyway. So why should we put forth so much effort to that? Just see if at the start of your meditation you can let that idea sink in. That whatever this session will bring is unreliable. First of all, it's unreliable because it's impermanent, as I already said. It's also uncontrollable, most of it. The mind usually has its own plans, regardless of what your plans are. You want to be peaceful and calm and wise and skillful and so forth. We just chanted. The mind wants to be restless and stupid and unpeaceful and unskillful. It's just the way the mind often is. It's not under our control. That may sound very demoralizing, but it's not actually. It's actually very liberating. Because you can let go of that part of your life, yourself, that you always try and control. By that I mainly mean the future. I always have this sense of going on, moving on to something else. Going from A to B to C. Never just content with A itself. But in meditation, you stay with A. That's where you'll find everything you ever wanted. By just using your wisdom in this way, it's a little bit of a reflective approach, at least to the start of meditation, just to set up the set the scene, as it were. By using your wisdom in this way, you can take away some of that energy in the mind that's always trying to move on to something else, to do something, to create a future. And if you can somehow convince yourself of this impermanence and unreliability of the mind, actually find a lot of peace there. And strangely, you'll find that peace, that is the thing you can rely upon. Because that's born not of creating things, but from letting go of things. So, I'll just say once more, whatever your experience in this meditation, it's not going to last. So there's no need to crave for it, for anything. There's no need to try and get rid of anything. In this way, this attitude, your meditation, there is no future inside of meditation. There's nothing to change, nothing to control, then there's nowhere to go either. That is how you end up with the present moment. Also, whatever you have planned to do after meditation is also impermanent and unsure, so no need to think about that either. Can let go of all that burden of planning and expecting and desiring and longing. For the next 30 minutes, I'll be more quiet, probably don't say anything, and you can just be here in whatever is left after you let go of the future, this desiring, that is the present moment. And the present moment is just what it is. We don't have to find it particularly beautiful. We don't have to find enlightenment right away. We're just here with this moment as it is because we know that's all that is for sure. And there we can find some stability. So I'll leave you with those thoughts, and after about 30 minutes I will guide you out of the meditation. Please continue to meditate as you see fit. Dear friends, we still have a few more minutes to meditate, but forget about the future. I wanted to leave you this session with a little bit more advice. Hopefully you found some peace and contentment just to be here, not longing for anything, knowing that whatever we achieve, it's not gonna be a permanent asset of our lives, not a permanent experience, I should say. Now, try and find some joy as well in the knowledge of things being impermanent. It is because things change that life is possible. If things would be lasting, if any kind of experience would be lasting, you would have it all the time, and there would not be room for fluctuation, which is what makes life into what it is. So we can be happy for impermanence, actually, in a strange way. It's also because suffering is impermanent that not only life is possible, but that enlightenment is also possible. And especially Nirvana, the end of suffering, is possible because things are impermanent. Some deep ideas, but maybe some of you can relate to that. And I say that because it's helpful to bring up some joy in the mind in meditation as well. Especially the end of meditation, to bring up some joy, maybe not through impermanence, but by thanking ourselves for being here and just for sitting here, for putting forth the so-called effort to meditate. Can be the most easy thing in the world, but can also be very hard sometimes. So regardless of what it was like for you today, I want to thank you, and you should thank yourself as well. Some gratitude toward yourself. In that way, always end meditation on a positive note. Whatever it brought to you, you were there to experience it, and that's all that really matters. So you can have some loving kindness for yourself for having meditated here today. I will now invite the bell 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ring is the time to come out of your meditation. Very, 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 very excellent. Nice. So before we move on to questions, if we do, I just want to drive home some of the points I've been speaking about. Usually after meditation, your mind's a bit more, hopefully a bit more clear, a bit more receptive, so I can brainwash you, as Ajahn Brahm calls it, a little bit better after meditation. If you don't want to be brainwashed, you can mute me or leave the call or whatever. But brainwashing is just a silly term. It's basically teaching you these ideas a bit more clearly. So I'll just, to repeat the ideas, I'll just take my own meditation as an example. How did my meditation go today? You can get some insights into the mind of a monastic. What is their meditation like? Well, maybe not so much different from some of you. I see some of you yawning. And I also found that I was tired. It's getting a little bit late here, but anyway, it's a bit hot in this room as well. A bit stuffy, no, the windows are not open. I just felt a bit tired. So what happened? I sort of started nodding a little bit. Never fell asleep, but just feeling a bit tired. I also had a little headache as well. So what did I do? My body was a bit tense as well, a little bit at the start. What did I do? Did I apply those techniques of relaxing the body and so forth, that are very good techniques, which I have also taught, which you are often taught as well? No, I stayed in the spirit of how I approach meditation today. And just knowing that this tiredness and this aching body is just a temporary experience. It will not last. So I don't need to fight it. I don't need to get rid of it. Just kind of let it be. And with that attitude, it loses so much of its problems, because usually a problem only really becomes a problem if we think there is going to be no end to it, or it's going to last for a long time, or we can't do anything about it. But if we're just with it, then it's just only one moment of problem, and one moment of problem is not a problem at all. One moment you can always deal with. It's always when you start in your mind to stack up moments together and make it into something long. When you imagine the future, I'm going to be tired this whole meditation session, this whole night. If you think like that, then you're going to be suffering. But if you're just, okay, at this moment I'm tired, who knows what's going to happen next? I don't care. I just sit here and I don't have an opinion about this tiredness. I'm equanimous about it, is how you might technically say it in Buddhism. I don't want it to go away. I don't want it to stay. It's just there and I'm fine with it. And like that, it loses so much of its strength, and the body becomes relaxed already by that attitude. So I found a lot of peace, actually, just by being there. I lost track of time. I even forgot that I was teaching meditation at some point. I was thinking, oh, is this Armadale group still there? I've forgotten all about it. Did I go over time? But no, I didn't. But I found a lot of peace, and still mind. My thoughts all stop, because I did not create a future. If I would have created this, how should I put that, this difference between where I am and where I want to be. Yeah, now I'm tired and aching, but I want to be awake and comfortable. If I create that difference, then I cannot find peace, because I've always got somewhere to go. But instead, I just lower my desires to be where I am now. I'm fine here with an aching body, headache, and a stuffy room. I don't mind. It's fine. I can live with that. Then the mind has nothing to think about anymore, at least in that aspect. And meditation becomes easy. You find a lot of stillness inside. And usually when stillness happens, when you keep your precept and you're a decent person, you find some happiness there as well. But sometimes you have to help that happiness along a bit to create some joy in the mind. Because when it's just peace, just stillness, it can create a lot of sleepiness as well, because it's not interesting per se, so it can be a bit bored. That's why at the end I said create some joy in impermanence. That's what I did myself as well before the end. Just to create some joy. The Buddha often talked about joy and happiness. He had many sorts of words for happiness, gladness, joy, and it is always occurring in the context of meditation. But I also reminded myself of not to desire, not to have longing, because joy and happiness, they're nice emotions, but they are also impermanent. So we use them not as a goal, as an end goal, but as a tool. When the mind is joyful and bright, it's stronger and it can create more wisdom. So I created some joy, and then maybe in another time I will talk about how to create joy in more detail. I don't have time for that today. But I did that with the mindset that the joy is not the goal, the joy is just the tool in meditation. And from that, it can create deeper insights, more peace even, and learn to live in the moment and let go of everything that's impermanent. And if you find out that all experiences in life are impermanent, that's when you start getting some insights into the deepest truth of the Buddhism. And that is what it's really, really about to people like me anyway. And what meditation is really about, not about these temporary experiences of peace and happiness, which are nice, but in the end it's about creating the wisdom into the temporary nature of things and to be able to let go of everything. And that is where I'll leave you today, or at least my personal input. Maybe you can have some comments or things to say as well. Maybe Chris, you can invite people or whatever you usually do.
Certainly, Venerable. Thank you for a wonderful meditation. Very, very peaceful. And we have a question in the chat. Would you be okay if I read it for you, Venerable?
Sure, why not? I can probably also see it. But yeah, better you read it out.
Everybody can follow it with us.
No, I cannot see it anyway.
I just want to ask Venerable to give us some more insight about what mind is, in his own words, based on what he has learned about the mind all the time he has been studying.
What mind is? Well, that is something you cannot really give a theoretical answer to, but the mind is we use the noun. A noun is like a word that means like a thing for the mind. Like we have a noun, the bell. We have a noun for the Buddha statue, the chair, the monk, and so forth. But it's really a little bit of a misnomer to talk about the mind as if it were some thing as such. It's more like we should find some kind of a verb for the mind, because the mind is always changing. It's fluctuating. It is like we say the wind outside, the wind is blowing, but the wind is not really a thing or something that you can't get a hold of. Sometimes it's blowing, sometimes it's not there. It's a name for movement, really. That's what wind is. And the mind is really movement, in a sense, rather than a thing. And so the mind is a name for a whole collection of different processes that happen and that are sort of loosely connected, but they are not connected through one solid, let's say, entity that the mind is. And this is a very deep idea that even in some strands of Buddhism doesn't get properly understood. But the thing is, if you see this deeply, then you'll see that all experiences are, as I said before, come and go. They're impermanent. And that way you learn about the mind is also impermanent. And that creates a lot of peace, actually, because even the mind is impermanent. Wow, what? No need to make our mind perfect forever, yeah. It's gonna be come and go. And I know that attitude sounds maybe unrelatable, but that is what actually part of what people see when they see the Dhamma deeply is that they know that their mind is a very impermanent thing, and not something you can really put a label on. It's even to say their mind is already a misnomer in a way, but we need ways to talk about this. So we say the mind is peaceful, but underneath the peace, there's not really a thing called the mind. It's just the peace itself. And it's a little bit what I said before, that we often talk about meditation and the attitude we have towards meditation. You can also think about it as the mind and the attitude we have towards the mind, but it's really the same thing. The attitude we have towards the mind is the mind itself. It's the same when we say the attitude towards meditation, that is the meditation itself. When we have a peaceful attitude, then the mind is peaceful. If we have a disturbed attitude, then the mind we say is disturbed, but it's really that peace and that disturbance itself, which is itself, is, you could say, is the mind. And at that point in time, yeah, it's that is really the tricky thing about when we talk about the mind. It's more like a name for a whole lots of different things actually that can happen, and together we call them the mind. But that is a little bit sometimes confusing in that way. Yeah, it's a little bit of a deep question. Well, my instructions were also not the most entry level today, so I can expect some deep questions maybe. It's a nice question, thank you. I hope that answers at least part of it. But in the end, you have to have your own experiences. So we cannot really talk about the mind from one person to another like we talk about, for example, again, this ball. I can show you this bell. I can show you that bell, and we know exactly which bell I'm talking about. I cannot show you my mind, and you cannot show me your mind. You cannot open up your head or your heart or whatever, and yeah, this is my mind. You cannot do that. So when we talk about the mind, it is very subjective, and that is why it's so easy to mistake what we are talking about when we say the mind. So I appreciate that question. So when I say the mind, I just mean all that sort of mental processes that happen, and we label them as the mind. But when the Buddha talks about the mind, he doesn't talk about a thing. It's more like he talks about the potential for things to happen. And when he says there is a mind, it more so means there is a potential for thoughts, emotions, that sort of stuff. That's what it means to have a mind. It's to have the potential to have all those experiences. That's how I would answer that right now anyway.
Thank you, Venerable. We follow this up with another question on a similar topic. Before exposure to the Dharma, I used to think I was the body. After I listened to the Dharma, I thought I was the mind. Then I thought I was the awareness. Now I realize I am nothing. The I is just an empty circular reference. Am I on the right track?
Right, yeah, that sounds like you're getting on the right track for sure. Because the I, that's another way helpful for meditation, is to not think about I as much. You always think, I am going to be peaceful, I have a headache, I am tired, I don't want to meditate, I want to meditate. And all that thinking of I is also, in a sense, you could say, impermanent and not reliable, because there is no really like an essential I as such. Again, a little bit deep. I don't mind talking about it. I'm just afraid of I'm losing some people with these kind of questions. But you are on the right track, because we are not the body. As I said, the Buddha also said that we are not the mind either. Yeah, he said, earlier, the Buddha said, if you take anything to be permanent, let it be your body instead of your mind. He did say that, but he also said, if you take anything to be yourself, who you really are, let it be your body instead of your mind, because your body is much more constant than the mind. And it's interesting, actually, that the Buddha said that. It's quite literally what he said. He said, if you want to take something to be I or me, then let it be your body. Although that's still incorrect, because the body is not in control, and we can't control it, and it'll die in the end, so it's not who we are. But if you take anything to be I, then let it be that, because it's much more constant than the mind. The mind is much more changing. So that is, you are on the right track. But I want to say, because this is more like, I don't know how experienced meditators are listening to this, that with this sort of reflection, take it easy, you know. There's some very deep ideas, and you have to be careful with them, because sometimes reflecting about non-self and not me, not mine, not myself can be disorienting, or you can how should I put this? If you approach it from the wrong mindset, it can be very confusing, and you might lose some stability in life. So take it easy with these subjects and only reflect upon them when ready. Yeah, because it can be very frightening, these kind of insights that you are not, even to realize that you are not your body, for some people can be very challenging to realize that the mind is also not yours. It's very, very frightening. So that's why we also meditate, is to make the mind more courageous. When the mind is happy and steady and peaceful and joyful, it is more able to reflect upon these very deep ideas. Many other religions are very comforting. I actually did a sort of like, it wasn't much of a debate, but I did like this inter-religious, what do you call it? It's sort of like a panel where you had like me as a Buddhist, you had a Hindu person, you had a Christian priest, and then you had a Jewish rabbi, and there was supposed to be a Muslim sheikh as well, but he couldn't come. But I did that in a Christ church here in Perth, and it didn't last very long, but it was nice to do. But all those other religions, when they were asked what is like the core of your religion, they referred to their spiritual text or God or things. But in Buddhism, I did not explain the deep ideas there in Christ Church, of course, but I said we don't have a holy book like that. And I will not repeat what I said there to those kids, basically. I kept it. I made a lot of jokes, actually, to the kids. To you, I would say, to you who asked the question, is that in Buddhism you don't have these comforting ideas often, like in the end it all comes back to God or something. That is what the Hindu person said over there, like we are all part of the divine or something. And in Buddhism you will not find that. Buddhism is much more challenging. We are not all part of some divine thing. It's all a process of change, is what life is. And enlightenment is to realize that life is change, and that is all. That's another way to call impermanence. It's just change. But that is sounds very easy to accept. Okay, change. But we want things to be permanent deeply inside of us until we're enlightened. We always try to hold on to things. We want to be in control of things. We want to get something out of it, out of life, basically. Something for me, for that I you were talking about, that I has to have some permanent abode that it can rely on. But in Buddhism, proper Buddhism anyway, you will not find that. The Buddha said, it's all not me, not mine, not myself. It can't rely upon these things. And that is actually challenging, but very relieving as well. And most of you will feel that there is some truth in that, and that truth is actually very beautiful, because to accept life for as it actually is, to see it as it actually is, and not to paint pictures or imagine things that are not there. For example, that cosmic divinity that the Hindu person said we are all part of. You can see through meditation that that is not true, that that doesn't exist. And then you're actually so beautiful to see life as it actually is. You're not having a veil anymore in front of your eyes. But anyway, reflect upon these things when time is ready. And sometimes your mind is only ready for these things like once a year or something. But that's okay. If once a year you reflect upon these things very deeply, it's more effective than reflecting on them every day ineffectively. So I just say that because most of you, maybe this is not the right time to reflect upon that. So then maybe do it another time.
All right. Well, Gloria, would you like to unmute and ask a question?
Follow on your answer. Will you say that, like, impermanence is actually comforting? Because you say that we don't have like a comforting God or like a world view of universe like the other religions. But I do think that impermanence and taking refuge in that is some kind of like comforting. Would
right.
You agree with that?
Yeah. Of course, we have a very comforting goal in Buddhism, and that's very comforting reflections we have as well. And as I said before, you can also find joy in impermanence as well, Gloria. So I'm not saying that is not the case, but we don't find comfort in like a thing that we are. That's what I was trying to say. Like, we are not the divine cosmos or whatever. We are not the universal mind, or we are not the permanent awareness or something like that. We find comfort in the things that we are not. We find comfort in letting go and not to be something, but to unbe things. You don't have to be anything in Buddhism. You don't have to be a soul or whatever they call it in other religions. And to some people that's challenging because they want to be something. And they want to do this meditation and get something out of it, as I said at this very start. But if you let go of all those ideas, actually becomes very, very peaceful, because you know you don't need to strive for anything, and there's nothing to hold on to. And when there's nothing to hold on to, then struggles become less, and they might even disappear altogether when you really let go of everything. But that is at the very end of the path. But while we're working towards that, we can already see that the more we stop holding on to, the more we stop identifying with, the more we let go. Like, if you can let go of your body more easily, that is already such a useful thing to be able to do, not just in meditation, but just in life in general. I used to get so upset when I was like sick or whatever. I thought I must have done something wrong, or if I did not do anything wrong, then I was going to be annoyed. Why do I have this sick body? Why can I not be healthy? But now, I don't get sick very often, but when I do, or when I have a headache or whatever, I don't care so much anymore about it. I really seen some growth in myself there. And that is just an example. I've grown in other aspects as well, and I hope that most of you will have grown in similar ways, because the way we grow in Buddhism is not by being better controllers in life, to be more on top of the control hierarchy. No, we grow by being able to let go more things, especially things that we thought were part of us. It's easy, semi-easy, to let go of things outside of ourselves. And when you become a monastic, you let go of lots of things, like you cannot own any money anymore, so I have to give up all your money. That's relatively easy, actually. It's just physical stuff, like stuff in the world. But letting go of this kind of sense of identity, of who you are, that is more difficult, but once that starts to happen, you find a lot of peace, and it all comes back to impermanence as well. That impermanence can be comfortable as well, because again, the example that I used to be angry that I was sick. Now I know I'm sick. It's just impermanent. You know, even if you're sick for your whole life, you're gonna die in the end. So it's still impermanent. Ajahn Chah used to always visit. That's what Ajahn Brahm said. Visit his monastics when they were in hospital. And one time, Ajahn Brahm heard that Ajahn Chah was gonna visit him, and he was all excited. Oh, my teacher is gonna come, especially for me to teach me something. He's probably gonna say something very wise and talk to me. And Ajahn Chah walked into the hospital, and he only said to Ajahn Brahm, "You're either gonna get better or you die." And then he left. And that's all you have to say. And apparently, he did that to all the monks. So no special teaching for Ajahn Brahm, but. So that may be a little bit disappointing for Ajahn Brahm, but actually a very good teaching, because it's true. You're sick, you're gonna either gonna get better or you die. Either way, it's impermanent, so it's all good, it doesn't matter. Again, we can live with impermanent things. Yeah. Thank you, Gloria. I hope that sort of answers your question. I sort of go on tangent sometimes when I try and answer a question, but yeah.
And thank you, Venerable. Is there anyone who would like to unmute and ask a last question or make a comment on this evening?
Wow, so many people, but everybody is contented and easily satisfied. That's very good.
And easily satisfied indeed, Venerable.
I saw somebody, sorry to interrupt.
Right, no problem.
Melanie.
Oh, Melanie, please, yes, go ahead, Melanie.
Yes, thank you, Venerable. If you could give a few tips about your next talk about how to bring joy in your meditation and in your life, because recently, I've noticed that I'm seeing more negatively the things around me. So.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that question. Yeah, I said that another time I can talk about generating joy, and I probably will. But by next time I'll come here, I will have forgotten about that. So that's not a promise. But I can give you maybe a few pointers right now. There's many ways to think about creating joy, but one of the most important things, I think, for many people is to maybe the world outside has lots of problems. And if you watch the news, for example, you can get very upset. And other people in your life as well, they never do what you want to do. They always create a lot of problems. No, not always, but that is overgeneralization. But that's what it sometimes seems like, you know. Even you live in a monastery and people with wonderful intentions, sometimes you feel like they all create problems. So what is very helpful to create joy is to not think about that, but reflect upon yourself. To be a good friend to yourself. And when you're meditating, you realize you're doing something great and you're doing something good, and you have only the best intentions towards yourself, always. So, sorry, somebody interrupted. So, you might find sometimes maybe you get upset or angry, but if you investigate that deeply, that anger and upset, there is always a reason for it, because you're always trying to find some happiness, some way, in some sense. Let's say, give my old example, I was sick and I got upset. I got upset not to make myself more suffering or more sick, but I got upset because I wanted to be healthy. So actually, there was some good intentions behind that anger, in a sense. Everything we do in life is, well, maybe not everything when it comes to helping other people, maybe not per se, but most of the emotions we have in life are all coming from a place of trying to find happiness in our, for ourselves. Even the so-called unskillful emotions of desire and anger, we always try and find some happiness. Or you get angry because you feel justified, you feel like you are right and the other person is wrong and they should know. Yeah, so that's also in a sense coming from a sense of trying to find justice and happiness in a sense. So what I'm saying that, just to remind you, Melanie, and all the others, that you can be your own friend, maybe your own best friend, because you always have good intentions for yourself. And you're always with yourself. So you can always be with your good friend, your best friend maybe even. And in that sense, you always can find some joy. I am, okay, forget about this sense of non-self now for a moment. You get what I'm saying. You're there meditating. Ah, that same mind again, that me again. Conventionally speaking, I'm happy to be here. Meditating, doing the right thing. And you can be happy doing that. When I was in a relationship before I became a monk, I once told my now ex-girlfriend that I was my own best friend. And that was a very stupid thing to say because I expected that they are your best friend. But I was already had that mindset that if you are your own best friend, then you're always with your best friend in the world, you know, and always have good intentions for yourself. And then you can always find some joy, at least in that. That is what I would give you today. But there's other ways to create joy that are very very helpful. But I will talk about that another time then. Yeah. Maybe, Chris, you can remind me next time if I come again, if I can talk about joy. I can just improvise. I don't really prepare for these talks anyway, so... And I just at the start ask if I could talk about joy, and I might just feel like it next time. No, I can't hear you, Chris.
I just said that I might just remember it too, Venerable.
Yeah, we'll know. Who knows? We'll see. It's unpredictable anyway.
It is unpredictable. Well, Venerable, we've had over 57 people with us this evening from Hong Kong, Perth, New York, Sri Lanka, South Florida, Minnesota, Indonesia, Finland, Germany, Melbourne, UK, Sweden, Poland, Brazil, and Japan. So I think a joyous evening has been had by all.
Anybody from Armadale?
Yes, we have many people from Armadale. Yes, most definitely.
Yes, okay.
Thank you.
Would you like to offer us a blessing to finish the evening?
Well, you just given yourself the blessing already by meditating, but okay, I can. Let's just remember, because sometimes after this questions and stuff, we can get a little bit more restless again. Bring back some of the peace you found, hopefully, in meditation, or some of the good intentions that you had to meditate. Just bring them back during a moment of quiet. And my wishes for you is that you'll find this happiness and good intentions more often. And to bring that home, I'll do a little traditional blessing. Sabarogo venimuto, Saba Santa Pavangito, Saba Vera Martiganto, Nebuto Chato Vampava, Sabitio Vivajantu, Sabarogo Venasatu Mate Bava. Tvantarayo sukidikayuko bhava abhivadana silisanicca Buddha pachayino chattaro dhamma vadanti ayuvano sukham bala.